This episode of Diaries of a Lodge Owner is brought to you by Lake Obabaka Lodge, a rustic luxury fishing lodge.
So I was fascinated as a kid when I'd visit my grandmother. She was going out in the forest picking stuff and saying, okay, use this, do that, and you'll be okay. And my brain was fascinated by it. I was just like in love with, how does she do it? How does she know? And so I started searching in the Bible and rereading it from cover to cover, which I had done as a kid. And I realized that the entire book talks about food, prophecy, and also how to live your life, that you become really healthy physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And I started studying all the little things, and then I started implementing some of them, plus what my grandmother had taught me outside and my father about trees. I started putting it all together.
This week on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Networks, Diaries of a Lodge Owner, we talk with two specialists in their own right about the essential connection between nature, fitness, and well-being. One of these fine gentlemen is nature's nutritionalist, specializing in wild edibles and survival. The other is a beast of a man possessing his third-degree black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And when he's not grappling it out in his gym, he's chasing muskies and talking about his adventures on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network's Ugly Pike Podcast. On this show, we tackle the topics of health and nature and how the plants that are most commonly referred to as weeds can be amazingly beneficial for your health. So if you want some suggestions on how to eat your way to health and soothe your soul in wilderness, devour this one top to bottom. And now it is my pleasure to introduce the host of the Ugly Pike Podcast, Frank Ungaro, and nature's nutritionalist, Gary Thibault. Here's my conversation with Frank and Gary. Hey, folks, Steve here from Diaries of a Lodge Owner, and I am absolutely, totally excited. Number one, we've got Frank from the Ugly Pike here. And Frank, introduce yourself to all, and don't forget to buy all of our stuff. Jocelyn's in the back there. I've got Diaries of a Lodge Owner hats and Fishing Canada, everything else. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. So have a look at that. Campus crew, by the way. Frank, tell us about, we know all about the Ugly Pike.
Yes.
But tell us about your background.
My background.
Your Brazilian background.
Not by ethnicity. But you know what? I watched the first Ultimate Fighting Championship as a young man and was amazed by what I saw. Actually, it was the second one. It was the first one I watched. And I said, this is a deadly martial art I can learn by lying on the floor. This is perfect for me.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking for an easy way out. Turned out to be a really tough route, but I called the Gracie Academy in California a week later, and for the ensuing 12 years, I probably took 40, 50 trips down there and got the basis for my education and worked a little bit in a normal job for, 17 years, and then really wanted to put my passions to work and opened a school in Niagara Falls, Pasador Jiu-Jitsu, and things turned out really well. So, yeah.
Pasador Jiu-Jitsu.
Pasador means in Portuguese, means someone who passes something.
Nice. So you're passing on the knowledge.
Not really, no. And, it's kind of a weird story that maybe nobody listening can relate to, but
the newer style
of Jiu-Jitsu is much less focused on something called passing the guard. So when you're in the guard, you're on your back and you're controlling someone's hips with your legs. And that's called playing the guard. And getting out of those legs is very difficult endeavor. And the newer styles, there's a lot of leg locks involved, so you don't have to pass the guard. You can attack the legs. So I wanted to name my academy after the old school approach, the difficult, grindy approach. The irony is that in the last year or so, I've fallen in love with the new school.
The new stuff.
Right? So the school is a really nice blend of old and new, and it keeps everything fresh and everyone's happy. And it's a great way to make something that I've been doing for three decades new and exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you're a black belt.
Yeah, I'm a third-degree black belt.
Third-degree black belt. That's fantastic. And nutrition is extremely important to a guy like you.
It's everything. And I'll tell you, you know, I was in Miami last week.
Yep.
And I follow a strict diet, but in Miami, it was a little, it's Miami.
Yes.
For dinners, for drinks. And I can tell you that when I got home, I kind of been moaning about it for a while now, but yeah. I feel terrible.
Yes.
Because I was eating the seed oils. I was eating the sugar, you know, things that I
processed,
stay
everything.
Away from.
Yeah.
And I really feel it in my inflammation. Joints. I just feel awful.
Yeah, yeah. I know. And I'm the same. I've struggled with my weight. I suffer from hypertension.
Yeah.
I type 2 diabetic, fatty liver, you know, all of the do it to yourself things.
Right.
And that brings me to the next very exciting part of what we're doing here today. I run into a friend of mine, Gary Thibault, who is a nutritionalist, a naturalist, a man with a ton of knowledge, native, and he has been helping me out with my ailments. And I'm just so excited to have you on here and to talk to you about being natural and one with nature and the effect of that on your health. And being a lodge owner, one of the things that I sold people was experiences in nature and how that affects your health mentally, physically, and everything else. So I'd love to welcome Gary Thibault. Gary, thank you for coming on with us at such short notice.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
And Frank and I are here, and we would, first of all, I'd love to get your background. So tell me a little bit about who you are and your roots.
Okay, well, I grew up in Northern Ontario in a little town called Callum, Ori Township. And my father was a Beothuk Native Indian of Newfoundland, and government still to this day said they killed them all. My father always said when he was drinking, well, they didn't effing get me.
Yeah.
So he was kind of rude about it, believe me. But I'll tell you, you know, he was a man of a man, man's man. And my father wasn't a very big guy, 150 pounds wet, but he's the only guy that I ever seen carry 5 bags of Portland cement in his hands just straight in front of him. And that was 400 pounds. And I'm not kidding. Down or upstairs, didn't matter where. And he held the world's record for cutting 4-foot pulp with a sweet saw, and it's never been done with chainsaws. 78 bush cord cut and piled in 22 days with a road for a team of horses to pick it up.
Really?
And that's recorded by the powers to be. It's a world's record. It's never been done.
Wow.
And then on my mother's side of the family, they were originally from the Ottawa Valley. They were Ojibwe, and our prime minister doesn't know that Algonquin is the language. It's not a territory. The Algonquin language was spoken from Newfoundland to Alberta. Most people don't understand that. And different dialects of it was the same language. And so I was fascinated as a kid when I'd visit my grandmother, who lived in a one-room cement shack, which the now owner owns that property. He uses that as his woodshed. And that what my grandmother raised my mother and 4 other siblings by herself with a root cellar in the floor, and there was never a lack of food, and there was always people coming and giving her a penny or a dime, because a penny in those days was worth something and a dime was worth a lot. And she was going out in the forest picking stuff and saying, okay, use this, do that, and you'll be okay. And my brain was fascinated by it. I was just like in love with, how does she do it? How does she know? And so picking berries with her and stuff like that, she'd send you to pick certain things and you'd come back with it and she'd say, well, this is poison. And you're afraid of poison, so you throw it on the ground. Yeah. She'd say, no. This is not poison like that. You'd have to eat pounds of it to die. But if you use this with some oil or fat on somebody's skin, it will heal the nervous system. And she'd give me an example of somebody living not far from us with that kind of a problem. And I was still fascinated how she knew. And so I never really used the information until I personally got sick when I was 38. And I started bleeding a cup of blood a day out of my bowels. And I was basically supposed to die. And after 2 years of doctors and medical system, I gave up on them. And I went home. And something my grandmother had taught me as a kid that the Bible was good, but the people teaching what was in the Bible were the problems. Because the, the Catholic Church really destroyed our family practically. I mean, it was incredible what they did to us. And so I started searching in that book and rereading it from cover to cover, which I had done as a kid. And I realized that the entire book talks about food, prophecy, and also how to live your life, that you become really healthy physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And I started studying all the little things, and then I started implementing some of them, plus what my grandmother had taught me outside and my father about trees. I started putting it all together. And then when I healed my body really well, after 10 years of people coming into my automotive business and asking me questions, I decided I'd go to school and study nutrition. I went to the Institute of Holistic Nutrition in Toronto, North York area. And after 3 months in the school, the teachers would be pointing to me in the classroom and saying, ask Gary, he's the expert. And I kept thinking, why am I in school?
Yeah.
But I kept doing this thing and I met some interesting people and I was learning stuff. And I got fascinated by blood because of something I read in the Old Testament. It said, keep your blood clean, keep your blood pure. And then there was a teacher in the school that was doing blood analysis, and I would volunteer at the health show downtown Toronto, and I would help her. And, you know, I knew enough about what's going on in the body that when I would see the blood live on a screen, I would walk away to the other end of the booth and sometimes bite my tongue so I wouldn't say something, because she'd say, pretty bad, eh? And I'd say, I don't know how they made it to the chair.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean.
Yeah, talk a little bit about this blood analysis and what is it?
So it was not invented by me or anybody else in our generation. It was invented and looked at by a German doctor by the name of St. Gregory in 1801. And he said, why are we fighting cancer? We're made from cancer cells. And so I asked so many women that don't understand, they carry a child for 9 months, they have a baby, but they don't know what the last organ in the human body is created. They don't have no clue. So the pancreas is the last organ, and people don't understand why. So when cellular structure ends up in the uterine lining, it's a high level of estrogen. And estrogen makes cells rapidly multiply and divide. That's what tumors are. So what causes it to shrink and go down? Well, as soon as the pancreas is developed and the pancreas puts out pancreatin and pancreatic fluid, now estrogen lowers in the entire body and the placenta, and the cells just gain size and weight.
Yep.
So what's the cure for cancer? Digestive enzymes. So it was proven by different doctors and dentists in the United States who got arrested, thrown into jail, culture banned, slammed. It's been done around the world. Every time somebody talks about that, they just get slammed into the ground. And so the more I study this, when I look at blood, you can see what's going on in the human body. Because like the Bible says, your life is in your blood. It's in your blood. Your power comes from your blood.
I believe that.
I tell people all diseases start from the gut.
Because
that's the most poisonous part of our body. And so, for example, if a man has prostate issues, when I look at them and they'll be there with their wife talking to me or whatever, and I'll say, so you're constipated. And they'll look at me kind of strange, like, how do you know that? I said, you're constipated. You realize where your colon and your urethra are touching each other, the thickness of skin between them. So the fact that there's a thickness of skin, the acid's going through, swelling up the prostate. So as soon as you make the person clean up and go to the bathroom properly, the prostate issue disappears. So, you know, I'm fascinated by these things all the time. And the way I do things is I use everything from nature, because nature is always teaching you.
Yes.
I mean, in the middle of the summertime, you know, I see chipmunks doing certain things. I say, oh, yeah, okay, winter's coming a little early. And when people come to my farm and on a day like today, it's mild outside and we've had a really mild winter, I say, spring's going to be cold and late. And they look at me, that's not possible. I say, well, you see those bushes with all these particular berries on them? They're food for the songbirds coming back. And there'll be snow on the ground, it'll be frozen, and they can't eat all the bugs. They need to eat something for 30 days or so till the bugs come up. And that's their cleaning mechanism to heal their body when they transition. And so these things are available for them. And Mother Nature, the creator of of it all put these things in front of us to teach us and show us, but most people walk around blind, deaf, dumb, and stupid. They don't open their mind. You know, I've been privileged, in a lot of ways, because when I wanted to study energy work and Qigong and Tai Chi, I searched around, I studied with a few good teachers, and then I wanted to study with a real master from China. And I came down to downtown Toronto, and it happened to be the New Year's Festival. And I walked out of my automotive booth into the Coliseum, and I looked at this lineup a mile long to get into the place, and this guy grabbed me and put me in the show. And I walked around for a couple of hours, and I ran into this little elderly lady, and I said, how come there's nobody teaching, you know, Kung Fu or Tai Chi or anything? She said, you want to learn from a real master. So I demonstrated what I was doing. She said, you're better than I am. I said, but I don't know. I want to learn from somebody that's really authentic.
Yeah.
And I got to learn from Master Wei Zai Wu. I studied with this man for 20 years in Kung Fu, Tai Chi, and energy work. And it was a blessing, a mind-bending blessing. And I was always a great student and philosophy looking at Bruce Lee, because he was a philosopher. And his philosophy was a mind-bending philosophy on, you know, that belts were for holding up pants, which I don't have any belts, but, you know, I'm not afraid of any challenge either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm the unsuspecting guy.
So now with all of this that you've learned, I know that when you looked at my blood, you saw certain things in that blood that you have to deal with, that I have to deal with.
Right.
Right? How and with what do you know to do that? Like, I mean, you say you were always interested from your grandmother.
Right.
What are, for people out there listening to the podcast and Frank and I, what are some of the things that we can start doing today and we have access to, no matter whether we have a plot of land or a tiny backyard or maybe even looking at dandelions on the sidewalk? What are some things that we can do to employ to grant ourselves better health? I'm not going to say great health, because you never know where somebody starts from.
No, everybody starts from a
and
place.
Jump in here with some questions.
I like the way you framed that question.
Yeah.
Because okay. it's hard to have dramatic results with your health. You have to make the decision and take small steps.
That's
and
right.
Build to.
A baby does not learn how to run coming out of the mother's womb.
That's right. That's right.
It basically can barely crawl.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a couple of those small steps.
Okay. So one of the things when I was first filmed by a raw food vegan person, which I'm not, in the United States, Marcus Rothgrans, he made the film DVD series about me, Free Living 101. He was the first person to really come out and say, you talk about everything you need on the earth is in a 1 mile radius. And I said, yeah. I said, when you look at nature, birds and animals and everything else don't carry food. It's almost impossible. They, wherever they nest or they build their house or wherever they're going to live, within that 1 mile radius, they have everything they need. And human beings are the same way. And I'm living proof of that. I'm building a farm, which you came and visited. I mean, I haven't bought material. Basically, you know, construction sites, I become the cleanup guy. You know, all the garbage, what people don't understand. You know, I was driving home from the farm one night and somebody threw out the water tank that I need for my house, which cost $600. Yeah. And it had a fake for free, and it's brand new. They even put the fittings on it. I couldn't believe it. I said, wow, God, thank you very much. What a gift.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we don't think inside of that context. So, for example, I tell people, you know, I don't care how many chemicals are sprayed on the sidewalk or around your yard or whatever. If a dandelion grows up through the cracks, it has the compounds and the resistance to resist all of the poisons. Otherwise, it can't exist. And at the same time, because it resisted all those poisons, it has the energy to take them out of your body. So a dandelion, for example, which most people don't realize, originated from China, then went to Europe, and then it came to North America with the building of the railroads because Chinese people brought it here. And it's not through Ireland or England like people try to think. And, you know, I always get a kick when I see people in the Aboriginal culture telling me, you know, oh, we've always used this. It's our medicine. I laugh because people don't look at origins of where one thing came from, right? burdock basically came from Japan. The Japanese use it as a blood cleanser, but it grows wild everywhere in the world.
So what do they use? The root?
Yes. And basically burdock, for example, if I see in somebody's blood a reaction that looks like a burr in their blood because I know they got an allergic reaction of something, I will put the actual burrs and grind it up in the tea because in nature, like cures like. It's always teaching you what you need. For example, I pulled a muscle in my arm some 7 or 8 years ago, and Virginia creeper, which is a poisonous plant, which you cannot eat in any way, shape, or form, the berries and the vine grow looking like your central nervous system, like the ganglia in your joints. So I took those fresh berries and rubbed them on my skin, and a few minutes later, the pain was gone. I thought, well, that's kind of weird. So the next day I did it again. I've never had pain in my arm or muscle problem there. So then I started taking it, bringing it home. It takes months to dry it out. I grind it up into powder, put it in a little jar, and I add pure, good quality vodka or rum, about 65%. You don't want it higher than that because then the alcohol is not good for you. So you put it in, mix it, and then I just have people stick their finger in it, rub it where the skin, so the alcohol penetrates and brings the medicine to the nervous system to heal it. So a lot of stuff that I've learned is basically by me being my own guinea pig. You know, my grandmother started teaching me, but then research and looking at things and examining stuff in nature. And then, you know, I was bleeding a cup of blood a day. How did I stop the bleeding? You know, I was using sweet fern that grows basically in Northern Ontario and parts of Northeastern Canada. I was using it before I even knew it was called sweet fern. I just liked the smell. And I said, I told my wife, we're dating. I said, this thing could go to a skirt on it and cook, I'd marry it. She didn't like that too much, but it's a fact, right?
Yeah.
So you see, I'm always looking and searching and looking around. And so from experience now, because I've been doing this for almost 20 years, looking at people's blood and doing things, I see the same kind of things in a lot of people. And I know what plants I need to do that because I went through these things. And you know that in 2020, I went through open heart surgery and it's 32 months now, no medication. You can't even see a scar on my chest. I could pull my shirt up and show you, there's not even a mark. And how did that end up being possible? Because you are what you eat. You are what you put in your body. And you need quality
food.
And
that is such an important thing to understand and realize.
And I tell people, you know, you shouldn't rely on the food system. You should be growing your own food. I don't care if it's in gardening pots on your balcony. You should be growing a percentage of your food. You should be storing food. You should learn how to can and preserve. Learn how to dry. You know, you need to learn how to sharpen a knife because you might need it one day. For sure. You understand? You know, you need to know what's available around you. You know, like I walk around a neighborhood and mulberry trees. People are sweeping the mulberries off the sidewalk because they don't like the tree. Yet the squirrel is laying on a branch. He's eaten so much, he can't even move. You could shake the branch, he'd fall to the ground. What's he, stupid? You know, why is he eating so much of it? Because he knows it's real food, right?
Yeah.
You know, all these things are around us.
Absolutely.
They're just right there.
Yeah. I got questions. I just don't want to go off on a tangent.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
That's what we're here for.
I got a few things I want to ask about. The first thing is intermittent fasting.
It's very good for you, but you know, what I've noticed about people fasting, and if you want to go to religious things or biblical text, you're supposed to fast one day a year in the fall on the Day of Atonement, according to the Bible, 24 hours, no food, no water. And when you do that, no food, no water, what happens is your kidneys and your bone marrow work together. And what happens is it starts to make your blood reproduce brand new red blood cells in your bone marrow. That's very important to help build your body.
But the trend these days is intermittent fasting. So a daily shorter fast.
Right.
Yeah.
That's good too. But overdoing it is not good. Because anytime you limit your body from having a certain amount of food, what happens is your body goes against you and it starts to store the calories. And it will store them. And you'll try to get rid of the weight, and it will not go. Because your body says, hey, we're going into a fasting period. There's a starvation going on, and it's designed to store food.
So what about intermittent just so that I get this clear. So if you pick, say, like a four-hour eating window per day.
That's good, but you would want to have it towards the end of the day.
Yes.
Not, you know, I see people all the time, they skip breakfast. I said, that's not good. I mean, we're just going to use your car as an example. I'm a master mechanic, automotive, you know, I build race car engines. If you don't put fuel in the tank, you ain't going anywhere, right? And you want to burn your energy in the morning, during the day, while you're up and working and moving. You need energy. At the end of the day, you're going to sit around and relax. If you're eating a larger meal at the end of the day, because if you starved yourself in the morning, you're going to be hungry. And then at the end of the day, when you start to lay down and go to sleep, for 4 hours, that food is going to be in your stomach. And now your liver is going to take it out of your intestinal tract in your stomach and store it as calories on your body, fat for future disposal or nutrition. And so now your liver is working overtime. It doesn't have time to heal itself or you. So you're working against yourself.
So that, excuse me, that is, it's key to do, to eat in the morning.
I totally, and you should have your best meal with good quality protein in the morning and good protein around lunchtime. At the end of the day, it's more light stuff.
Yeah. Yes. Cool. Which is like that question you asked earlier off air about eggs.
Yeah. 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 I eat a lot of eggs and, you know, I want to watch my cholesterol and there's, it's funny because the old school nutrition, if you look at the pyramid, it's almost like what you shouldn't do. The old school yes. food pyramid is almost full of things you shouldn't be eating, seven servings of grain a day and stuff like that.
It's, no.
So, you know, I just want to make sure when you're talking to an expert that you get opinions and because egg is the perfect food, I think.
It is. It's the only food on the absorbability in the body. It's 49 out of 100 and nothing else can come close to it. And if you look at nature, there's nothing that won't eat eggs, from snakes to bugs to everything.
Right, yeah.
Everything will eat an egg right away. Even the chickens, if they break a shell, they eat all the egg.
So why do I don't drink it, but why do we drink milk then? We're the only mammals that drink the milk of another mammal. It's,
right. You know, I'm not against that either, but something I learned from the Bible that goat milk is very important. It's the one milk that's really important for your body.
Okay.
Because it has a balance no other milk has. It's 33% calcium, 14% magnesium, 11% potassium, and 3% hyaluronic acid. So if you look at watch marketing on TV, all of these skin cream companies,
Vichy
and everything, they all got hyaluronic acid.
Right.
Where are they getting it? From goat milk. So, you know, you want to look younger?
Drink goat milk.
You better drink some goat milk. That's and the best way is to make kefir from it, ferment it.
Okay.
So that way you get rid of the sugar and then you got the protein and the fat.
So kefir or kefir.
Yes.
Yes. That is one of my favorite things.
And you know, something that people don't understand too is sauerkraut, which the Germans name sour greens, sauerkraut, fermented cabbage. The Chinese invented it to stop starvation in the 15th century. And because lactic acid is the first food you got from your mother's breast milk when you were born, lactic acid makes your microvilli open up. And then mucus forms in between. And because there's mucus there, now your three main bacteria, Acidophilus, Bifidobacterium, and Bulgaris, have a home to live to digest your food, right? So lactic acid is important, not in our muscles, but in our gut lining, it's a key, right? So that's something, fermented foods, when you look at the blue zones around the world and all the people, Okinawans, wherever, that live to 100 plus.
And the blue zones are where they were studying longevity.
Right. And, you know, I always say there's actually 9 blue zones, and one of them is the Sudbury Basin in Northern Ontario, because you can go into the hospitals there and talk to the doctors. I know that for experience. I went there and talked to a lot of them. And they say it's not uncommon that we see people going in at 100 plus into our hospital and never seen a doctor.
Yeah.
They come here to die.
And are they native?
No, not necessarily that are native. They're just every whatever population. But because I think one of the key ingredients is if you look at the Sudbury Basin, almost everybody has a cottage or a friend with a cottage. They're outside. A lot of people garden up there. They're outside working in the ground. And if you look at the blue zones, that's one of the things all of the populations do. They're on the ground 3 or 4 hours every day, and they're eating mostly their own food.
Yeah.
and the air quality is better than what people see.
Gotcha.
Back in 2016, Frank and I had a vision to amass the single largest database of muskie angling education material anywhere in the world.
Our dream was to harness the knowledge of this amazing community and share it with passionate anglers just like you.
Thus, the Ugly Pike podcast was born and quickly grew to become one of the top fishing podcasts in North America.
Step into the world of angling adventures and embrace the thrill of the catch with the Ugly Pike podcast. Join us on our quest to understand what makes us different as anglers and to uncover what it takes to go after the infamous fish of 10,000 casts.
The Ugly Pike podcast isn't just about fishing. It's about creating a tight-knit community of passionate anglers who share the same love for the sport. Through laughter, through camaraderie, and an unwavering spirit of adventure, this podcast will bring people together.
Subscribe now and never miss a moment of our angling adventures. Tight lines, everyone.
Find Ugly Pike now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Escape to the wilderness of Lake Obabaka Lodge, where the exclusivity of a fly-in meets the accessibility of a drive-to destination. Cast its pristine waters teeming with trophy lakers, northern pike, and smallmouth bass. Discover a paradise rich with history, offering serene moments and adventurous days. Lake Obabaka Lodge is where memories are hooked and history comes alive. Join us where the wilderness whispers your name.
So, Frank, I know you said you have a bunch of questions.
Please, Frank.
I don't want to interrupt
the flow. Frank.
Yeah, well, you're part of the flow.
Frank. Well, let's talk about a very popular trend, the carnivore diet.
You know what, Tom? I'm not against that. You know what? I have people that are eating more meat than ever before. And when I look at their blood, they're really doing well.
Well, it depends on what you say doing well, because a lot of the carnivore people have quite elevated LDL. And so if you're looking at ratios, triglycerides, maybe not triglycerides, if you're looking at LDL and ratios, HDL, through a traditional analysis, these people are not scoring that well. But the school is... there seems to be a new school of thought about how to interpret LDL. I don't know if that's something that's in your wheelhouse or not, or if you're
comfortable. Well, you know, look, I look at it this way.
Like when I was on carnivore, when I was doing carnivore, my cholesterol was terrible.
Right.
But I felt great and I looked great.
Okay, but you got to understand something. If you put sugar into the human body, what does the body do with it? It turns it into fat.
Yeah.
And your cholesterol goes through the roof as well. Because our liver is programmed to produce cholesterol
right. To
heal the body. Because what's your skin made out of?
That's
what are your arteries, veins? That's all the bad cholesterol. So if you feed your body good cholesterol and those levels go up, it don't have to produce the bad cholesterol, right? It's going to balance itself out.
So you would look at an LDL rate and a ratio score...
And explain for everybody listening the difference between LDL and the good and the bad.
Well, the bad is LDL. The bad has been historically referred to as the LDL, and the HDL.
So
you want the HDL number higher, and you want the LDL number lower, traditionally.
Right.
But some people are saying that maybe we need to revisit the way this is analyzed.
I would agree with that. So, for example, when I was in the hospital with open heart surgery, and, you know, the nurses would walk in the room and they would see me eating a bagel with butter as thick as my little finger on it. I mean, you couldn't see the bread, okay? Because my father taught me as a kid, if you can't see your teeth mark in the bread from the butter, there's not enough butter. So I learned that at a young age and I always loved to eat butter. So they'd say, you got a heart problem. You can't eat butter. So my first question would be to the doctors and the nurses. I'd say, well, do I have any blocked arteries? And they look at me and say, no, you got a bad heart valve. I said, but everybody around me in every room here is having bypass surgery because they have blocked arteries. And they're not eating any butter. Well, wait a minute. So
what's the situation?
What's the deal? And they couldn't argue with me. I had no blocked arteries. And I was eating butter by the truckload. Okay. So a few things I've learned along the way is a tablespoon of olive oil right from the bottle, especially if it's from Greece, unblocks your arteries. If you look at the population off Sardinia, off the coast of Italy, and you look in different islands in Greece, they have no heart disease at all. But they drink oil, right? But they don't cook with it. They drink it right from the bottle.
And they dress everything with it too, the fresh vegetables.
Yeah. They eat olive oil. And black seed oil is good too. Black seed oil.
There you go, Steve.
Yeah.
Look at you.
A teaspoon of it.
Yeah.
Not more. It's really powerful. You only need a little bit of it.
Tastes like gasoline.
Oh, yeah. It'll burn the back. If you got a cold, put a little shot of that in your throat and gargle it. Man, the virus is gone. It left the city.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting because I, too, don't think... Listen, high cholesterol, I feel that the medications that they put on to control the statin drugs to control your high cholesterol are far worse.
It's evil.
Far worse than that.
The amount of side effects.
Yes.
You know, I argued with doctors in the hospital and said, hey, your meds, it's not working. It's not working. Something's wrong. And finally, when I went to the rehab center and I had to learn how to walk in 2021, or in 2020 at the end before I came home Christmas Eve, I was learning how to walk. And, you know, for example, when I was in Sunnybrook, they couldn't close the wound in my spine because, you know, when you're laying in the bed for months, bed sores, they open up. And I had a hole in my tailbone as big as my hand. And they were trying everything and they just couldn't do anything. So I got my wife to bring in a bottle of hemp oil. And I said, I wanted the nurses to put it in. They wouldn't do it. So I got the doctors to order it. And they were pouring it with their gloves, you know, and putting in and not leaving it open even. And within days, my skin started all growing back and everything. And they were bringing nurses from four floors below and four floors above me. And the nurses were saying, oh, my God, where do you get this stuff? I said, you can buy it at a good health food store. You know, I just happened to go to a private farm and buy it because I know it's not damaged, right?
Right.
And so people don't understand the power of real food and real things. You know, I give the example. People talk about, you know, you hear the medical system, we do no harm. Okay, well, all right. You know, what does the Hippocratic Oath say? It says, let thy food be thy medicine be thy food. And the way to health is an aromatic bath and a scented massage daily and do no harm. But nobody quotes the first two pieces. They only quote the last one, right?
Yeah.
Right? And you know, come on. We need to revisit living the way we're supposed to. We're meant to live, you know, a proper way with the environment.
Yes.
And if we all did that, man, would the world ever be a great place? You know, I get a kick out of everybody wants to go to electric cars. I know you're saving on gas and supposedly, but... Even Ontario's advertisement on the TV right now, in order to build an electric car, you have to mine special metals. Then you got the batteries and the plastics and everything else. By the time you put it all together, I don't think the environment's saving anything.
It's worse.
And then you
got
to have
humanity. They've got kids mining cobalt. Yes.
More nuclear plants. And what do you do with the leftover nuclear waste? Put it in your backyard. I don't want it, right?
Yeah.
It's got a 1,000-year shelf life. And, you know, now you see it on the news. They're trying to whitewash this. But when one volcano erupts on the earth, it puts all the carbon of everything burning in 1 year, in 1 day, into the atmosphere. So if carbon's the problem, wow. Let's stop all the eruptions, right?
Yeah, and volcanoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So we talked about the cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
I have another topic that I've struggled with my whole life because people have told me yes, people have told me no, people have told me no. And I want to talk to you about salt.
Oh, great.
Salt has to be in your body. Without salt, you're messed up. Because first of all, if you don't have proper ocean salt, you don't get enough minerals. And ocean salt keeps stomach acid strong. Without strong stomach acid, you can't burn the protein and break it down. So vinegars and salts are important to humanity.
Yes. The
quality of them. And today, that's something. Now, if you go and buy table salt that's been iodized and cooked, and it's got selenium baking in it.
Sugar, too, sometimes, believe
it
or not. Oh, yes.
They put it in there. They put all kinds of poisons in there. That is poison to the human body. That's going to raise your sodium level because basically you're eating pure sodium. But real sea salt. Now, that is very important to humanity.
So there's a big difference. Now, isn't there a shortage of iodine in the human body in today's world as well?
Well, that's because people aren't eating from nature.
That's right.
What about different salts, though? Like, before we go on, you've got your Celtic salt that people
say
is great.
That's the best. That's
your
the best.
Your kosher salt. You have your Himalayan salt.
Himalayan salt is a mine salt. So my father was a hard rock miner.
So heavy metals?
Yeah.
I've been reading that too.
Anytime you're drilling rock, salt is a rock, you got to put water and lead in the end of the bit.
Right.
And lead's the lubricant. Salt is porous. It absorbs too much lead. So when you test that salt, it's a very extreme high level of lead. Ocean salt has some lead, but not in close. Right? It's a balance.
So you think Celtic salt is the best way to go?
Yeah. And there are some salts, too, that are, from places like Korea, that where they cook and bake the salts a certain way, that are really high in minerals as well. That's really, really good. Kosher sea salt, if you can get your hands on it as well, and Celtic salt, those are really good salts.
Cool.
Excellent. Because, what is the, is the best way to phrase this question, a tie between hypertension and the intake of salt?
Well, I would say the problem is people are still eating too much sugars and carbs. They're eating too much junk. That's what's causing the real root of the problem. Because, when you look at somebody's blood and you see all kinds of stuff in there, undigested fats and proteins and parasites
and
all kinds, and sugars and crystals of sugars, your body is dealing with all this stuff, right? For example, when I can see in the human body, in the blood, I can see the compounds of fibrin, right? Now I'll tell the person, your eyesight's changing. And they'll say, yeah, how do you know that? Well, I can see a spider's web in your blood. How does a spider catch flies? He makes a web. Well, your liver can't talk to you, so it puts out this compound, like a netting, to pull out and clean up your blood to help it. And so that affects your eyesight. So if you went to a really high-quality eye doctor, he should tell you, your eyes are changing because your liver's dirty, right? But there's no money in not selling glasses. The system is backwards.
System is backwards, and I can tell you, I just got sick of my doctor. I like my doctor too, but I just got sick of his approach. Just you go in to see him and he's already writing the prescription without even asking a question. So I hired a doctor that works out of a longevity clinic in St. Catharines. It's amazing when you get in front of a real doctor that gives you real time, right? So they do all sorts of blood work and liver scans, bone density and athletic. We had some really intense athletic training tests and stuff. They hooked me up to all sorts of things, and I'm going to be with him for the year doing things. So one of the things I really noticed and what we talked about was the reactive nature of the modern medical system, where he said to me, they'll spend $150,000 to keep a cancer patient alive for 3 months, but they won't spend that on the front end to educate people on how to properly take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And,
I totally agree.
Backwards.
It's all backwards.
It's all reactive.
Yes.
And most people don't understand really where sugar is, because it's everywhere. Who would have thought it's in salt, some processed salts? Nobody. And also, of course, seed oils. And this is something that if you just get off of seed oils, and that's another thing you got to look for.
You got to look for pure stuff.
But you got to read your ingredients. You got to read your ingredients everything you buy. If you better be shopping the outside four walls of the supermarket only. And if you can't, you've got to read what you're eating, because all you need to do is go off these seed oils for a couple of months and then taste them again.
Inflammation.
And you will feel it in your body like you got hit by a truck.
Yep, I agree totally.
Yeah,
totally.
Well, listen, our time is starting to get a little short here, Gary, but I love this conversation, and I know we'll have you on for another one. But again, I just want to come back full circle to that question where if somebody wanted to improve their health by adding something from nature into their diet, and this is just a, you know, I'm not looking for a silver bullet because I know that there are none.
There is no silver bullet.
But if somebody was just going to make a minor tweak and add something into their diet from nature, what would you suggest that your best bang for your buck in doing something would be?
The springtime now is coming up where your dandelions are growing around your yard or in the park or in a field, picking them up, pulling the roots out. The whole plant's edible. There's no part of the plant that's not edible. Washing it off and chopping it up and cooking it like you'd cook spinach, the roots and all.
Sorry, just the roots, the flower or the leaves?
All of it.
The stem?
All of it.
The whole part.
The flower?
Everything.
Okay.
The whole
Italians,
part.
Italians do that.
Yeah, Italians tell you they eat cicoria. That's the blue plant. That's the blue flower. You'll see that growing in.
Now, my grandparents picked dandelions and cooked them all the time.
Yeah, but they're the dandelions is the yellow flower. Chicoria is the blue flower.
Okay.
Okay? And the leaves are different. So a dandelion has a lion's tooth.
Are you telling us to eat the yellow dandelion?
Yes.
Okay.
And the blue ones are good too, but it's more of a saber tooth, small. That's really good too. Okay? Both of them are equal. Okay? But the dandelions really help heal your liver. So if I was going to pick any plant, that would be one of the things. Now, if I wanted a few extra plants in there that come along a little later in the season, lamb's quarters. It's a common weed that comes from Iraq originally, Babylonian Empire. It's around the world. It's basically the most nutritious plant you can eat on earth. It's free. People pull it out and throw it away. I collect.
I have a garden full of it, and it's
quarter?
Funny. Yeah, lamb's quarter.
Or okay. Duck. We call it duck feet. The leaf is like a duck foot.
Yeah. Well, I have the cottage up north.
Uh-huh.
Everybody knows that, and I always try and grow a garden. And I left. You know, I was gone for a couple of weeks, and it was July, and you know the growing season, and it was wet. And then sun and heat. And Gary, by the time I got back, the garden was nowhere to be seen.
Right.
It was gone. And the majority of what grew was lamb's quarter.
And you know, you see, because people don't understand how important that plant is. I mean, you just have to watch the little goldfinch in August when you get a first frost. He's hanging upside down on the lamb's quarters, eating the seeds, and that will give him enough energy to fly to South America.
Right.
And you're going to throw it away, right? So I go around picking up those seeds, and I'll dry them, and then all winter I'm throwing into my food and cooking with it, right?
Yeah.
And when it's growing in the springtime, you can't get me to stop eating enough of it. Now, for example, another plant that people, if you go to a high-end food store, you'll see amaranth. We call it pigweed. It's Jamaicans call it callaloo. There's 80 varieties around the world. So in the early 1800s to 1900s, farmers around the world, it basically because of governments, tried to annihilate that plant off the earth because they said people can have free food. That one plant you can eat almost if you take and cook it when it's fresh, you got food from spring to fall. And then if you want to preserve in the fall all the small leaves and boil them in a jar and pressure boil them, put them away, you got food all winter. Mm. And what did it cost you to grow it? Nothing. Mm. Zero. It just comes back. And cool. You know, there's 10 or 15 foods like that.
I've got a big property, too, with that backs onto acreage. And I have I've got fiddleheads. I've got morels.
Yeah.
But now I'm gonna take a look for these things. I'm excited to see how much of it I have. I must have a ton of it.
Well, you see, the other thing, too, is... Being indigenous, we know that, you know, the poplar tree, the Bible calls it the balm of Gilead. And the poplar tree is survival food. It's a medicine and food. So, you know, if you're starving in the bush, even in the wintertime, and you're hungry, you take the outside layer of the bark, peel it off. You know, the inside first layer,
mm-hmm.
You pull it off, slice it thin, put it in boiled water. It tastes like pasta. Mm. It's better for you. And you can eat it raw if you're stuck.
Pasta's garbage for you.
Yeah, but if you can eat the poplar bark, the inside layer raw. Now, it don't taste good, but you ain't going to die.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to feed you.
Yeah, if you need it, it's there.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much around us, but we're being blinded. And that's what I'm trying to do at my farm. And I bring people that way up north and I teach them these survival skills because I see there's a great need for it.
I think a lot of people are starting to open their eyes.
Absolutely.
The podcast movement in general has really opened people's eyes to what's happening with commercially produced food. It's just basically almost all bad for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
99% plus.
I would believe. Yeah.
Well, listen, fellas.
Wonderful time.
Frank,
thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It was my pleasure.
It was great.
And Gary, I am so happy that we bumped into each other today. We will do this again.
Absolutely.
Maybe Frank will do another, we'll have you on and Gary at the same time.
Absolutely.
And we'll continue this.
I'm here at your disposal. Whenever you need me, I'm
we'll
happy
continue
to.
This at some point.
Sure. I'd be glad
whether
to
it's
do
at
it again.
The Toronto Sportsman Show where we're at now or whether we hook up at a later date. But
Invite me up to this cottage I keep hearing about, and we'll drop some hooks in the water.
Yeah, on the French River.
Microphones on.
That sounds great.
There you go.
And thank you all at the Sportsman Show for coming out and listening and supporting. And thank you, folks, for listening to Diaries of a Lodge Owner and getting to this point. I really appreciate it. All those likes and smash that button and subscribe and follow and all of that stuff helps all of us on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. I'm the host of Diaries of a Lodge Owner. We have Frank, one of the hosts of Ugly Pike, and Gary Thibault. He is the Nature's Nutritionist.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And this brings us to the end of another episode of Diaries of a Lodge Owner.
I'm a good old boy, never meaning no harm. I'll be all you ever saw, been reeling in the hog since the day I was born. Bending my rod, stretching my line. Someday I might own a lodge and that'd be fine. I'll be making my way, the only way I know how. Working hard and sharing the north with all of my pals. Well, I'm a good old boy. I bought a lodge and lived my dream. And now I'm here talking about how life can be as good as it seems. Yeah.
As the world gets louder and louder, the lessons of our natural world become harder and harder to hear. But they are still available to those who know where to listen. I'm Jerry Ouellette, and I was honored to serve as Ontario's Minister of Natural Resources. However, my journey into the woods didn't come from politics. Rather, it came from my time in the bush and a mushroom. In 2015, I was introduced to the birch-hungry fungus known as chaga, a tree conch, with centuries of medicinal use by Indigenous peoples all over the globe. After nearly a decade of harvest, use, testimonials and research, my skepticism has faded to obsession, and I now spend my life dedicated to improving the lives of others through natural means. But that's not what the show's about. My pursuit of this strange mushroom and my passion for the outdoors has brought me to the places and around the people that are shaped by our natural world. On Outdoor Journal Radio's Under the Canopy podcast, I'm going to take you along with me to see the places, meet the people that will help you find your outdoor passion and help you live a life close to nature and under the canopy. Find Under the Canopy now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and laying things, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly,
marinated,
or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.